Welcome back to BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare educational and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host, Brian Moore. Thanks for joining us again. In this episode, we'll be talking to Jen Worley and Carrie McGovern about interior design, specifically about the case to be made for including interior design in the planning process. First, let me introduce our guests. Jen Worley is the Director of Interior Design for BSA and has been with the firm for nearly 8 years. A graduate of Ball State University with a bachelor's degree in psychological science, interior design, and environmental design, Jen worked for HKS for over a decade and also Ratio Architects. She has several designations, including EDAC, RID, LEED APID plus C, and is a Lean Six Sigma Yellow Belt. Carrie McGovern is a senior interior designer and interiors lead with BSA and has been with BSA for nearly 12 years. A graduate of Indiana University with a bachelor degree of science in interior design, she previously worked with Still Studio and Lore Design before joining BSA. Welcome to BSA by Design. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
So let's start here. How did you both get into interior design and where does that passion come from? I usually like to ask all the guests when they join. So Jen, how about you go first and then Carrie, I'll move to you.
Sure. Thank you, Brian. So this is my second career being an interior designer. My first degree was in psychology and my initial experience was in the field of social work. And I worked with a lot of developmental disability adults or adults that had traumatic brain injury. And during that time, I was contemplating going back to school for counseling. And while I loved that career, I found it just wasn't for me. But what I did notice was when I was working with people that had developmental challenges or brain injury challenges, they couldn't traverse the built environment. So that intrigued me. And I thought, well, maybe there's another way I can serve the clients, but doing it through design. I had always enjoyed design. I had never tried anything design related. Grew up doing music and stuff, but nothing design. So it was a risk for me to go back to school, but I went back to school for interior design. It's been the best decision for my career I've ever made.
That's awesome. Carrie, how about you?
So for me, I've always loved, you know, the creative side of things, the art and drawing and things. My mom was always a really good artist. And so she was a nurse, so kind of had that healthcare field. So I think I maybe picked up from her kind of that drive to help people, but not so much the hands-on part of it.
Right.
And then my dad was an accountant. And so I think I have that kind of left brain side of in me as well. And so I think what I love about interior design is it really takes both sides. It's like a science and an art. And so I get to exercise, you know, both parts of me. And so, you know, I think it happened organically. It's the perfect profession for me.
A good blend between the two.
Yes. Yes. It's always different.
Well, and while we're talking to you, what can you share some of your background prior to joining BSA?
Sure. So I went to IU, and then once I graduated IU, I went back to Evansville, which is my hometown. And so I worked there for 3 years. And the person who I internship under had just started her own firm at that point. So I was her first employee and learned a ton in that job because we were just starting out. And so we were, you know, building templates and processes and trying to just figure it out and start a business. So that was a really great learning experience. And then at that point, or 3 years later, I decided I didn't want to be at Evansville anymore. I was ready to move on and go somewhere else. So I came to Indy, started working for Lore Design, and they did healthcare and TI work. And so I learned a lot there. I was there for 7 years and then came on to BSA. Been here ever since.
Yeah, the startups are sometimes the best way to learn all parts. I helped launch a magazine here locally like 15 years ago, and I was a writer, but I didn't know what I was doing when it came to producing a magazine. And you figure it out,
yep.
You know, you jump in and you kind of figure it out. So yeah, it's a really good one.
Yeah.
Jen, how about you? What did you do prior to joining BSA?
Well, once I got my degree in interior design and architecture, I ended up hearing about BSA. And when this was back when we had a minority owned firm and that firm was just starting out. So I also had the
same experience, right?
A lot of things on the fly. We all did different. We all answered the phone sometimes if we needed to do that.
Right.
But that firm was specialized in healthcare and higher ed. And I just fell in love with the healthcare aspect of everything, and higher ed too, but healthcare is more my personal passion. So I've been with that firm, which was part of BSA. So I've been with BSA for a long time. Yeah. We left for a little bit. I worked for a generalist firm for a bit, and that just didn't fill my cup. I really missed the meaning that I feel that BSA provides with the mission.
Yeah.
Yep.
Excellent. And I have to ask about your hashtag, Jen, on LinkedIn. Think like a scientist. What does that mean?
Well, that kind of goes to what Carrie was saying earlier about right brain, left brain.
Uh-huh.
I feel like what we do is very creative, but it can be also very systematic. And coming from a background of where I did some research early on in my career as a psychology student, I've always been attracted to that rigor and the ability to framework around everything that you do. So I think when you look at it that way, you can measure your results before and after, see if you really did make a difference or not, and it becomes less subjective.
Yeah.
So for me, I approach everything in that way. Evidence-based design is something that we use here all the time at BSA, and I've been very attracted to that. So I just feel that that's really important for us to think outside of the parameters of what something might look like. Because doing good design is not enough. It needs to mean something.
Right.
And it can't mean anything if you can't measure it.
Yeah, I'm planning on having Zara on at some point here in the near future and talking about evidence-based design. I just thought it was such a neat hashtag. You know, people put hashtags in their bios in different places all the time, but it was a very different one. So yeah. I appreciate you sharing that. Carrie, in your opinion, how is interior design in the areas of healing and learning and discovery different than, say, interior design of hotels or homes?
Yeah, so any interior designer kind of needs to get into the mind, you know, the people who are entering that space. And so I think, you know, as Jen always says, it's a walk in empathy. So, you know, depending on what that space is, though, that process can be a lot more impactful, you know, in certain settings. So, you know, in healthcare, for example, thinking about how patients are feeling, how family members are feeling as they're entering a space and as they're moving within it. And if we can help people feel a little bit less anxious or a little bit more comfortable in that kind of setting, that has just a really huge impact on them and you know, their healing. And so we just feel like it's what an interior designer does in any market, but within these, you know, these three markets, it has a really deep.
With healing too, specifically with all of them, that you've got different user groups. So you mentioned there's patients, there's families, but then there's also the people that work in there.
Right. The staff.
Trying to find ways to alleviate their stress and finding some of these areas too. So it's quite a challenge, I'm sure.
Yeah. And you put on different hats and think about, you know, all of the different stakeholders and how you can, you know, improve their experience.
So Jen, what are some of the things that you have to consider when you're looking at like a healing project versus, let's say, a learning project?
I think like Carrie's saying, there's a lot of crossover, especially the pandemic taught us. I think it highlighted the similarities between the markets. Everybody's a person, right? And I'm always the person that talks about Maslow's hierarchy of need. And if you don't meet those basic needs, which the pandemic took some of those very basic needs away from us, of choice and control. If you don't meet those needs, people can't live their highest selves. So I think that's how we look at both typologies and thinking about how we can make it the best it can be for all the different user groups. Like Carrie was saying, we do alignment sessions with our clients and talk through wearing the hat of each customer type, journey mapping, you know, making sure that everybody has a good experience throughout the whole front door all the way to the discharge or exit. And this is the same thing that you do a lot of with the higher education, the different learning styles. And Carrie, you can speak to that better than I can.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we do what Jen is describing only, you know, through the lens of students and faculty and kind of walking through all the different ways in which students are learning these days. And, you know, whether that be active learning, more kind of active ways of learning, or kind of, you know, more lecture style. There are so many different pedagogies and different ways to design around that.
And that goes into the research that we look at in looking at how, you know, studies have shown us different students have learned better in different ways. And that's something that is fascinating to me, especially since I do more healthcare designing than higher ed.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's really incredible that you can affect people, like, because I'm always thinking about how behavior and space can impact impact in how we make a difference in that.
So you just referenced, you've got user group meetings, you're getting this feedback. What are some of the unique challenges for both of you that have come up on the interior side as you're going through the design process?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what we do, what we were saying, you know, some of it is very technical, then some of it is, you know, artistic. And that part of it is subjective. And I think, you know, having to, you know, create spaces that, you know, we have clients who have certain, you know, expectations and kind of, I guess, living in that subjective world with our clients that can be, you know, challenging sometimes to extract, you know, what they want and what we're trying to accomplish. So I think just that side of it, the subjectivity of what we do can be a challenge. And, you know, when stakeholders change, you know, sometimes that happens in projects and, you know, you kind of have to adapt. So I think that's one of them.
Well, I think to build upon what Carrie was saying with stakeholders changing, that's why what we do up front is really important with our guiding principles and visioning and alignment. And that gives you a, kind of a playbook for the project. So you can go back and educate people as they come back in, because what we do is subjective.
Yeah.
So having that background is really important, I feel like. And then again, with the reason.
So this is why we chose this material and these colors. Okay.
Exactly right. Yes. And, you know, it really can document that user experience that we've already mapped out in the early phases of design.
Well, part of what I wanted to discuss was the idea of having interior design play a key part of the planning process. And it's been something that I know is at the forefront. Can you make the case for interiors being part of that? And what is so important about interior design being considered early on?
Yes, absolutely. As Carrie was saying, we always talk about we walk in empathy with the users. And I think we have a very personal relationship with our users as we go through the project process. Maybe it's a little bit more focused than some of the other disciplines, because we're all about the interior space. And that's where people spend 90% of their time. So we're very attuned to even things like, if you're sitting across the table, what is that experience like? If somebody's walking up to a registration area and somebody's standing and the other person's sitting, what does that feel like? If you're in an exam room and your doctor is standing over you or sitting beside you, what does that look like? So we're always thinking about how those experiences come together, where other disciplines, you know, there's just so many other things that you have to deal with, right? That I think we're kind of the preservers of that empathetic experience, the experiential side of the project.
Yeah, it's a really good way to say it. Carrie, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, I think what Jen says, I totally echo that. I think the other side of it, just in, you know, the planning aspect of it, other disciplines are so focused on, you know, the program space and, you know, meeting all of those needs. And I think what we bring is kind of a reminder about, as Jen was saying, the experience, the you know, entry, how that feels when you walk in the space and, you know, kind of those shared spaces, making sure that those are, you know, just as important as all of the other spaces.
You could have the best designed, most attractive looking outside of a building, like it's a shell, and then you walk in and if it's not, that's going to have a big impact on the users for sure. How is sustainability and green building practices integrated into interior spaces?
A big part of that is through the materials, right, that we select. You know, we always try to be good stewards of the environment when we are making those selections. Materials, you know, that have recycled content and or are recyclable, you know, where they're coming from, geography, you know, how far they have to traverse to get to us is another big one. And then, you know, there's sustainability for our earth. And there's also, you know, the human aspect and the well-building aspect of it as well for, you know, the humans within the buildings that we're creating. And so making sure that those materials too are healthy just for people to breathe.
And things like daylight, making sure that our spaces have adequate daylight. And if you're thinking about wayfinding, orienting yourself to the exterior when you come out of an elevator or something like that, all that goes into how people perceive how the design works. And they are part of the well-building principles that we use.
So kind of jumping off of that, I know just from sitting in different meetings with all of you, I learned a new term when I started here, which is biophilia, and how designing some of these spaces, like you said, with natural light and its impact on...
Yeah, so we use biophilic design in a lot of our projects, really all of our projects, because we're humans, right? We need to relate ourselves back to the earth and well-being. And we look at something called the 14 Principles or Patterns of Biophilic Design by Terrapin Bright Green. And they have some actual evidence that's related back to different things that you can do, different stimuli in the environment, different materials that you use, regional influence to materials. So they've done a really great job of packaging that into something that's very usable for the design community. So we look at that quite often. Nature.
Refer back to it while you're, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that, those become some of the design drivers that we use on our projects as a regular basis.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, too, to think about it from kind of an anthropological standpoint, too. You know, we as humans have lived, you know, out among nature for the majority of our existence, right? It's a more recent experience where we've started living indoors. And so we naturally, you know, like the feeling of being in, among a natural environment. That's how we've evolved. So yeah, it's a good reminder to bring all that back in, you know, and
I'm going to mess this up, but there was this thing I was reading last week, and it was, imagine the history of the world as a 24-hour clock. And to your point, it's like humans don't even show up to like 11:45.
Right.
And since like 11:56, they have been outdoors. So, and with nature and everything. So that makes a lot of sense, because a lot of that is just pre-programmed into our DNA and our genetics, I suppose.
It is. And that goes back to having an interior designer in the planning phase, because we think about things like complexity and order of the space. And there's some things that you can do with scale and light, that we use light a lot, that can help people naturally feel more comfortable. You may not realize that's why you're feeling more comfortable, but I think it's some of the things that are kind of ingrained in us as human.
One of the things that has come up recently in a project was, you know, whether or not we would have spaces along a wall. We as humans like to feel sheltered. We like to feel, you know, we don't want to be out in the middle of a room. We don't want to have our back to an entrance. So we think about those things too, as we're planning, you know, and again, going back to kind of anthropology, we didn't want to be exposed, you know,
right.
It's a safety.
Because the elements were hard.
Right. And there were predators.
And safety.
You know, it was a safety aspect. And so, you know, we bring all of that to, as we're, you know, to design, as we're designing spaces.
Yeah, as well. And to that point, Carrie, it goes all the way down to the furniture that's selected for the space and the configuration of that furniture. So, you know, that's kind of the level of detail that interior design gets into for the experience side of things.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When Sam Creer was on, by the time this comes out, it will have been a few episodes ago, but she was talking about when she was a child, she would rearrange her room all the time. And I was like, I did that too. Mm-hmm. And I think it's you're trying to find a configuration where you feel like you can study the best or sleep the best, or, you know, is it near the window? Is it away from the window? You know, so that's very fascinating. Okay. So I wanted to finish with just asking, as we look to the future, what are some trends or innovations that you both foresee in interior design that continue to shape the way that healing, learning, and discovery happen?
Well, I feel like, you know, anytime people talk about trends, they say AI is involved.
Yes.
And
it comes up frequently when I ask this question.
Yes.
But I am curious how that impacts interiors.
Yeah. So I could see us using AI for really more so probably to speed up our processes, maybe speed up some decision making with our clients and things. I could see us using AI for, you know, just to kind of sort through options before you even, you know, need to come in earnest. You know, a lot of maybe AI can do some of that upfront work for you before, you know, we get involved. And then, you know, just I think from a, like, the visioning side of things, I think, you know, right now what we're doing is just, you know, surfing the internet for inspiration images and things like that early on in projects whenever we're trying to kind of get some inspiration. And I think with AI, we'll be able to tailor that more, you know, pointedly to what
exactly
what we're and really help to aid that process with our clients.
And I think what it forces us to do, AI, is become, we are experts already, but we really need to hone our skills and being able to evaluate those decisions that AI can spit out very quickly, because you know, that's kind of the human side of the AI. So I think, Carrie, you're spot on. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, thank you both for coming on. I hope we have an opportunity to have this discussion a little bit more as the future unfolds.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes.
I'd like to thank Carrie and Jen for joining us on this episode of BSA by Design. Jen recently published an article that can be found on our website called Shaping Today's Offices Requires Focus on Different Needs, highlighting our interactions with the built environments post-pandemic. Jen touches on those well-building principles she mentioned during this episode. It's a quick read, and I encourage our listeners to check it out. If you're interested in learning even more about BSA Life Structures, we encourage you to visit our website at bsalifestructures.com. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information, as well as a link to Jen's recent article. Be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. We've got more content to share on social media, so be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and X. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.